Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.
All right, Jim Potts back on the air. And as usual, thank you so much for sharing your Sunday afternoon or evening with us. And also with my co-host, Jamal, we want to thank you. Jamal is now going to be a regular on the show. He decided he's going to end up paying me to be here every week, so I figured I'd give him a shot.
Hey, I got time on Sunday.
At any rate, hey, you know, today we're going to be talking about a number of things. We're going to consistently introduce the HR corner, we're calling it, and talk about HR-related things as well. You know, that was always my game plan. I got so busy and tied up with the other pieces of what we do. We're going to be talking about something. This week we're going to be talking about warning notices, things of that nature, progressive disciplines, just spending a few minutes on it just to give some general education to the public as well. And then we're going to be talking about men who are actually the victims of domestic violence. It was an issue that took place in Ontario, California, and it just kind of brought the issue back to light, because most people, when they think about this business about domestic violence, they think more about women than men. So we're going to just touch on that as well. And then we're also going to be talking about the counterterrorism and some announcements by the government, some things to look out for as well. But before we get started on that and before we get started on the emails, I want to let you know something. We're going to be doing a speech on the impact of domestic terrorism on the workplace, and that's going to take place through the Valley Industry Association, and that's going to be on Tuesday, January 28th, where I'll be speaking in front of that organization. Anybody that's interested can reach out to the Valley Industry Association. They're out in Valencia, California. For those of you that live here locally that might want to attend, if you get in touch with them, tickets are available through them. Again, I'll be talking about the impact of domestic terrorism on the workplace. So looking forward to that. We have a number of speaking engagements actually throughout this whole year, and we'll be talking about those and giving you information about those as well. Okay? All right. So having said that, let's move forward here. Okay, first email. Here we go. Jim, I was very distraught to hear that a young boy in Utah killed 3 kids and a woman yesterday. When will this end? I know you've been outspoken with gun control, but maybe you need to take a harder look at this issue. Susie from Denver, Colorado. Okay, look, for those of you that are not aware of this, this had to do with the fact that a boy, and they haven't released his age yet, he actually went into a home. And then the authorities don't know about the relationship, but apparently he went in there and he actually killed some other kids along with a female adult. And then the last one, he shot one of them, but then somebody heard the shooting, came over and drove him and the other victim to the hospital. So we don't have the whole slant on this yet. But when you ask me about these things, and Jamal, you know, on the air, we've talked about this business with guns, et cetera. I mean, look, this is actually the first mass shooting in Utah since 2007, I think it was. Yeah, since 2007. So they consider that a mass shooting because of the number of casualties, et cetera. But this business about these kids and guns, and again, Utah, you know, it's a small town. They haven't even had a homicide in 20 years, and now they have an event like this. I mean, it goes back to what we talk about all the time with the fact that you just never know.
Gun safety, once again, you know, storing your guns is so important and so vital. We can't have this attitude like, it's never going to happen to me. My kid is not that kind of kid. We don't know who's we would all like to think that about our kids. But the reality is, it won't be your kid if you don't allow any kind of easy access to it. I think we should start doing more, too, like more commercials and stuff like that and advertising. A lot of these politicians don't do that. And I think that would be a common ground if they start advertising weapon safety. Instead of banning everything, how about let's start preaching and meet in the middle with weapon safety? You know, advertising lockers, stores, storage facilities, appropriate things like that. And I think that's a common ground that both sides of the aisle can agree on.
Well, you know what, Jamal? I think that is actually a good point. You know, police officers, and you were raised, and obviously in my household, and we had weapons. The weapons were always secure. Police officers normally have, as an example, they have safes in the house where they keep these things. But the general public, maybe they're just too lackadaisical about it. I don't know. But I think that that's a good point. We don't see that. The only time we really see anything is when what? There's a shooting, and now the politicians get on the news talking about the fact that we ought to have gun control. Gun safety is a very good point and how people should maintain that.
Absolutely. And there's a wide variety of price ranges, too, that you could, like, simple things, like the one that has the wire that goes through the barrel and locks. I mean, that's not even that expensive. What, $10?
Right.
And that could save lives, you know.
Or the lock triggers.
The lock triggers.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's only for a few bucks, you know. This boy actually faces 10 charges. So now here's a kid. I don't know who his parents are. They haven't gotten into that. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens to him. But, Susie, the realities are I'm not changing my mind about gun control, quite frankly. But it's just like Jamal says, I think it really does go back to safety and the parents and these kids having access to these weapons. So we're just going to have to wait and see how this one turns out. But this is the first, quote-unquote, mass shooting of 2020, and unfortunately it had to do with a child, so to speak. Okay, second email. Jim, I can only assume that you have heard about the 6 neo-Nazis that were arrested a few days ago before the gun rally in Virginia. The rally has to do with the Second Amendment sanctuary cities in Virginia and assault weapons. These guys were going there to kill. Hats off to our law enforcement personnel to stop this tragedy. Stan from West Virginia. Well, here's the deal. The deal is that, yep, it's true. For those of you who did not hear about this, there are 6 of these guys that were picked up, and they had like 1,500 rounds of ammunition with them, and they were heading to this rally. Now, Jamal, this rally is going to be in Virginia. It was supposed to be for, a sanctuary city type of rallies, and these guys were, because there was going to be a lot of people there, they were heading there. Now, these guys were part of a group of neo-Nazis that were called the Base. The Base is what it's called. And the Base is a national socialist neo-Nazi group that actively recruits on social media. Now, remember we've talked about social media before. Yes. And the outreach on social media. And again, safeguarding to make sure that these kind of organizations aren't able to recruit, but that's what they're able to do. Now, I know you're a social media guy. I mean, what do you think? How do we shut that down?
The problem is you can't. You just can't. Because of what the actions of a chosen few do, we can't, punish everybody else for it. But what I do want to say, I want to commend the police department on being active and, and stopping something that could have been a terrible tragedy. I know a lot of police officers get, accused of racism and, police departments. But here's a situation where they're showing, that they're doing their job. It's a tough job. And, and they came down on these neo-Nazis and stopped them from, acts of violence against minorities. So I think if you're going to get mad at them, for certain mistakes, let's commend them, too, when they get it right also.
Well, but it's getting out of control because, quite frankly, we were watching the news this morning, and they were showing this Baltimore police officer that was actually trying to make an arrest. And there they had people around. So he had the suspect down on the ground because he was trying to stop him from escaping because around him was a crowd of people, some of them trying to pull the suspect away from him, and then they're kicking the police officer. And this is in Maryland.
Wow.
I mean, you look at those kind of situations. I mean, I don't know where his backup was, quite frankly.
Wow.
Or whether he was even able to get on the radio. But we're looking at this video saying, you got to be kidding me. And these guys are kicking this officer. Somebody else is trying to pull the suspect away so he could get away. I mean, this stuff's getting out of control.
The best thing anybody could do, whether you agree with the officer arresting somebody or not, the best thing you could do for everybody involved is pull out your cell phone and film it.
That's what somebody did.
Send it to court. You know what I mean?
Right.
Well, I mean everybody.
As evidence,
like,
right.
Instead of kicking the police officer and stuff, because you don't know what happened before you arrived there and saw what was going on. You don't know if that's a murder suspect, a child molester suspect. You have no idea. So the best thing to do is to videotape it. That's safest for everybody.
Well, these days, there's a lot of video going on. There's no doubt about that. Before I forget, by the way, if anybody's got any comments about any of this, you can always call us at 818-602-4929. Again, 818-602-4929. And you can always send us emails also, by the way. The emails, just send it to listenupwithjp at pottsandassociates.com. All right? But getting back to the situation with these neo-Nazis, because that's where I was with this. Now, apparently this rally that's going to take place in Virginia tomorrow, it has to do with these sanctuary cities. It's going to be with these gun owners. And apparently Virginia is introducing now legislation about these assault rifles. But in there, they're also including, if you're ready for this one, shotguns. All right? So they're including shotguns, you know, any kind of firearm. Anything that they say that would be technically considered an assault weapon is what they're trying to do now with this new legislation. Now, I mean, shotguns, I mean, a shotgun could be deadly, as you know, at close range.
Right.
But at a distance.
See, once again, you know, I hate to say it, we have uneducated people trying to make decisions for everybody else. You know, I'm sure a lot of these people who are making these decisions, like all guns are bad. No, that's not the case at all. Before you call something an assault rifle, go do your homework on it. Go do your research on it. Matter of fact, go try one out at the range.
Well, I will tell you that it's the politicians of that state that's actually introducing this legislation. Right. So it's not like it's an individual. It's a politician. I don't know. You know, election year is coming up and stuff. So who knows? But right now, one of the issues that they're talking about is the fact that there's 27 counties in Virginia and three towns that are now Second Amendment sanctuary cities. Oh. So this rally was, you know, surrounding all of that. The okay. anti-gun register, you know, the anti-regulations of the guns, the sanctuary cities, et cetera. I mean, that's pretty impressive to know that 27 counties in Virginia are sanctuary cities for Second Amendment. But I don't know. You know, it's always going to be an issue. There's no doubt about that regarding this business about assault rifles and sanctuary cities and Second Amendment. Second Amendment's always going to be, an argument. We talk about this stuff all the time. But guns are guns, right?
Wait a minute. Let me ask, are they saying sanctuary cities from guns?
No.
Okay.
They're calling them, no. Okay, let me clarify. They are talking about Second Amendment sanctuary cities, which means that they can't take action against people for having their guns in that city. You know what I'm saying? So against the legislation. Now, California has some. They did that out by Needles, California.
Okay.
Needles, California is a Second Amendment sanctuary city because they were having a problem. I talked about this on the show a number of months back where they're talking about the fact that their income was being impacted because, you know where Needles is because we had a house up there, remember? Okay, so they're talking about, and as you know, there's a tri-state right there. There's California, Arizona. Right. So what they were saying was that in these other states like Nevada and Arizona, where they have a right to carry, et cetera, they stopped coming across into California because they can't bring their guns there because in California you can't.
Oh,
so
wow.
Needles turned around and passed their local legislation, and they actually are trying to get the state of California to agree with them that they can make Needles, California, a Second Amendment sanctuary city, so these guys can come across the border, so that they can participate. And you know, we got up there, we got the water.
Right.
You know, it's on the Colorado River.
Right.
So what they were doing was saying, hey, if you let us do this because it's impacting our economy, was what their logic is.
Right.
So I believe that's still up in the air, but that's what they're talking about.
Okay.
All right. That's what they're talking about. So anyway, getting back to this business about the Virginia. So I don't know. We'll wait and see what happens. The rally is tomorrow. So try and catch the news, people, to see what ends up happening. Hopefully there won't be any other incidents. As we said, that the law enforcement's all on top of that. But again, it'll be newsworthy if anything happens. It's probably still going to be on the news. You just never know. So we'll just wait and see. And hopefully it won't be, anything that's very bad. These different groups, you know, they call them white supremacists. I mean, white supremacists, you know, they use these terminologies so easy on the news because these guys are neo-Nazis. Their organization on social media, they're all Caucasians. I mean, those kind of organizations are bad. There's no two ways about it, but it is what it is. We live in a country where everybody can say what they want to say, basically, and end of story. All right, Jim, third email. I believe some of our issues of international terrorism comes from our involvement in the Middle East. Maybe if we had not gotten involved over there, the resentment toward us would not have initiated 911. Do you have any opinion about this? Lori from Oakland, California. Lori, I do have some opinion about it. And quite frankly, based upon this email, I'll show next week. I'm going to go more in depth on this because I think that you raised a very good question. A lot of times, you know, Jamal, we're talking about domestic terrorism, international terrorism. But I thought that the question that was raised by this was very good because when you really look back, how did this all start?
Right.
You know, so next week we'll be going a little bit more into detail on that. But let me just tell you something, since you brought the issue up, Lori. The United States actually helped create Al-Qaeda and ISIS, just to let you know that. Now, those two organizations were actually made in the USA. And I hate to tell you that, but it's true. It was a terror designed to divide and conquer the oil-rich Middle East and to counter Iran's growing influence in that region. And you see, this, when you look at that and say, okay, what was the American interest? Well, you know what it was. It was the oil at that time. Oh, it still is. But the CIA first aligned itself with extremist Islam during the Cold War. This goes way back. So this is not new. And next week, we're going to be going more in depth on that. All right? Now, let me just tell you, it all had to do with taking sides against the Soviet Union. That's how this all started, to make sure the spread of communism, okay, et cetera, was not going to happen. So it's interesting. And I'm going to leave you with this thought as well before we get into some of the other areas we're going to be talking about. And that is, you know, during the last administration, we killed Osama bin Laden. Go back in time, people. All right. And to answer Lori's question more specifically, the CIA is the one that actually gave birth to Osama bin Laden and breastfed his organization all during the 1980s. We created that. So, Lori, to answer your question, yeah. You want my thoughts on it? I think that when you point a finger at somebody else, you got a couple of fingers pointing back towards you. So there are some issues there, in my opinion. But that doesn't mean, even though those issues are there, that we can't defend ourselves or try to stamp this out. It's almost like once you made a mistake, how do you correct that mistake? I mean, you agree with that?
I absolutely agree with that.
You know, so we have to, we'll be taking a closer look at that next week, and we'll actually be going into detail about that as well. So it'll be interesting. Anybody has any questions or comments, send the emails, like I said. Or if you want to call in, it's 818-602-4929, okay? But, yeah, we'll be talking more in detail on that next week.
Isn't that what Rambo 3 was about?
Jamal, Rambo made 15 movies. I don't know which one.
He helped Afghanistan against the Russians?
Yeah. Richard Crenna, that's right. That's right. Now that you mentioned it, that's true.
Right.
That was Rambo 3 because Richard Crenna got caught and he had to go in there and rescue him, but... You know, all of those movies kind of have the same plots, but yeah. I mean, they had so many different Rambo movies, I almost forgot. But yeah, no, that's true. That was Rambo 3, and it had to do with he was in Afghanistan, another place where we've been for a number of years. Right now, they're saying, I think, Afghanistan is the longest, quote-unquote, conflict that we've been in, that we've been involved in. Okay, let's talk about this business of, I don't know, you want to talk about the HR first, or you want to talk about the men that are victims of domestic violence? Which one you want to talk about first?
You know what, let's go ahead and start with the HR part.
Okay, so, is what we talked about, and Jamal and I work together throughout the course of the week, so many of you know about our organization, Potts and Associates. You know, we do a lot of, you know, work with businesses in terms of being able to help them stay on the right path, so to speak, regarding state and federal guidelines. So we have a lot of exposure to issues that come up. And we get calls from people regarding this business about progressive discipline.
All right? Absolutely.
You know, so the progressive, and just to let you know, progressive discipline is something that technically isn't required by law. And progressive discipline has to do with the verbal warnings, the first written warning, and the second written warning. So people don't understand that as a concept. Now, an employer, like I said, by law, doesn't even have to have a progressive discipline policy.
Right.
All right. But it's what we need, okay, if an employer is going to terminate somebody to be able to avoid litigation, they need this documentation in place.
And that's where employers get in trouble at, the lack of documentation. How many phone calls do we get every day? This person did that. We need to terminate them. And the person might be on workers' comp, or the person might have a medical issue. And then they want to terminate them at that time. Like, okay, do you have documentation that this has been going on for the last year? You're telling me, but do you have proof? No. Well, guess what? Now you can't do it. You know, so, you know, documentation is definitely key.
You know, it'll be interesting. I don't know if anybody's interested in calling on this as an issue, but people don't realize about this business, about this documentation. So let's just take a moment. And again, we're not giving out legal advice here, so we're talking, everything is hypothetical. But a lot of employers out there will have this progressive discipline policy, and what that means is that you give the person a first written warning, verbal warning.
Right.
And then a first written warning, second written warning, and then a third written warning. Now, the interesting part about this is that sometimes this gets lost because an employer has a policy, it's in their handbook, and somebody will commit, you know, a violation of company policy.
Right.
And then they want to fall back on the policy saying, hey, how come you don't have a, you know, I mean, I wasn't given a written warning. Well, we were talking about this on the way over here, and we recall a client so many years ago now where the employer had a progressive discipline policy, and the employee gets caught stealing. The employee wants to turn around and go to HR and say, hey, you know what? They have a progressive discipline policy, and how come they didn't give me a warning rather than fire me? Now, the guy got caught stealing, and now he wants them to give them a warning not to steal again? Who in the hell is going to give this guy a second opportunity to steal? Doesn't work that way. So there's some policies that you have to understand out there that an employer can terminate you. And again, this is according to whatever policies that the employer may have in place. Let me make that clear. All right. Now, Jamal, I know throughout the week when we get these calls from these clients on this documentation, I mean, we've heard stuff all across the board.
Right.
You know, and we basically have to advise them, you know, and work with them, you know, to make sure that the documentation is clear. So for those of you out there that are managers and supervisors, let me just tell you something. It's not the quantity of the documentation. It's the quality of the documentation.
That's correct.
You know, don't think that you're going to walk in, you know, to some court, you know, like unemployment hearing or someplace else and come in there with 30 written warnings before you made the decision to terminate the guy. All right? You're supposed to use those strategically, but the key is you got to use them.
Right. Also, for the verbal warnings, too, I think should be noted that those could be documented as well on paper, that a verbal warning was given to such and such on this day. You know, it's not a written warning, but it's considered a verbal warning. But just, once again, document it for the record, because you never know when you might need that to back up something.
Well, it's true. And employees generally don't understand that verbal warnings can be in writing. But here's a better one for you, Jamal. Why not send the employee an email telling us? Because these days with technology, use technology to your advantage.
Right.
You turn around and you send the employee email, hey, Jamal, we talked this morning about the necessity of you getting to work on time. You send the person an email. When they acknowledge the email, what do you have? Documentation.
Absolutely.
You know, and we can always, you know, pull that back. Now, the other issue that comes up with this business about warning notices is the fact that employees sometimes do not want to sign the written warnings. Okay, so just generally speaking, you can't, by law, make them sign these things. So let's just make that clear. Cannot make them sign it. Can't force them to sign it. By any means, all right? There's no law that says that the person has to sign these. Even if they disagree with it, all right, they can just write on there if they want that they disagree with it, as an example. And a lot of them have spaces for people, at least the ones we provide to our clients, have spaces where the employees can make a comment, as an example. All right, so the minute they write anything in there, you know, they're acknowledging the fact that they got it. So from that perspective, now, understand that it's a verbal warning, first written warning, second written warning, and then normally it's termination. But you still have to do the third written warning. Now, look, the other issue that comes up with this business about warning notices is that sometimes people think that you've got to, if you wrote the person up for getting to work on time, or getting to work late, rather.
Right.
And now the person's never late again.
Right.
Okay? So the next time the person does something else, but it's not about getting to work on time. So they think that some employers feel that they have to start the process over again. You don't have to start the process over again. It doesn't work that way. Okay. So what does that mean? That means that when you write them up the first time, all you got to do with the first written warning is say any future violations of any company policy. That's the way that it works. I remember when I was teaching for the University of Phoenix, I used to get that a lot.
But you know? You usually like in a unemployment hearing, I don't know if you want to feel like that's a different subject, the judges won't count that as like, so he was late once, but then he misplaced a couple of items and stuff, and that's the, you know, you're up to your third warning and you terminate. Usually for unemployment purposes, it has to be kind of associated, unless there's just so egregious that, you know.
Look, the problem with some of these judges that we encounter, guys, is the fact that some of them, no matter what you do, they're going to fine for the employee. All right. So I get that part of it. They do look for consistency and uniformity. And over my 39 years, almost 40 years now of doing this, I've seen it all across the board. But remember something. The unemployment is only a small part of this. Wrongful termination suits, they're not going to care what it is. It's a violation of company policy. Here's your written warning. So just to separate that out, okay, from that perspective. All right. So that makes a difference. Okay, so look, the biggest thing in my opinion is that you got to do these. You got to create them. You got to use them. Okay? You got to create them. You got to use them. All right? Now, the other thing to take into consideration is sometimes when you have an employee there, and this is the last point on this, and we're going to move on, that when they refuse to sign them, this, you know what, managers, I'm going to tell you, always work together. Managers can have another manager or somebody from HR in the room with them. So when the person refuses to sign, you got the witness there that says, I saw Jim refuse to sign the written warning. All right? So the manager, the other person, the witness signs that they saw that. And not the employee's name. They signed their own name, all right, that they saw this person refuse to sign the warning notice. All right? So that's how you have to think about it. Just think about documentation. Now, look, for those of you out there that are employees, that are not managers, look, stay out of trouble. You know, it's just that simple. An employer has a right to write you up. If they're trying to help you preserve your job, the purpose of the warning is to try to get you back on the same track, on a proper track. That's what they're designed to do. All right? But they have to do this documentation. So I want to say don't take it personal, but you are going to take it personal, I'm sure. But that's just the way that it works. They got to follow, you know, their own policies, but they have to do this documentation, or at least should be doing the documentation, okay, so that they make sure that they properly document any kind of performance or non-performance or violations of company policy. All right? All right, guys, that's the HR Corner for this week. Anybody has any suggestions throughout the week that they would like us to talk about, send us an email in the HR Corner. We'll talk about some of these things. And again, it's not intended as legal advice. It's merely giving you some suggestions and, you know, and speaking from a general standpoint. Okay? All right. Okay. Let's talk about this other issue, because Jamal and I talked during the week about this, because Jamal had come up with this topic because of an incident that actually happened out his way. He was not involved in it, obviously. But there was a California probation officer out in Ontario, California, that killed herself and her two children and shot her husband. So do you remember about that?
Yes, I do. Being close to where I live, you know, those kind of things are disturbing. The police got there, and I guess the husband called, and he was shot.
The wounded husband.
The wounded husband called. See, that's the other problem. We kind of laugh when it's like a man on the other end of the battery, and that's why we're having this topic today. But, yeah, the wounded husband called, and, you know, and it was a standoff for like a number of hours. When the police finally went in there, they found the two children dead as well as the wife, self-inflicted wound.
Well, let's clarify that, because that was after a five-hour standoff.
Right, so it was said a few hours, yeah.
Yeah, it was actually five hours is what happened. They tried to negotiate with her. They tried to do everything. Now, when the police first got there, she came out of the room with a gun. So I think there was a few shots that may have been exchanged, whatever the case may be, but she ran back in the room. And here we are with this five-hour standoff. And at the end of the 5 hours, they finally, you know, went in because they heard the gunshots, and she had killed herself and the two children. And the father, from what I understand, is recuperating. Now, she was actually a San Bernardino probation officer. Now, what happened in San Bernardino? See, San Bernardino has had issues. You guys might recall the shooting in San Bernardino at that Christmas party a few years back when all those people got shot and killed. That was another county facility. And then after that, there was another issue in San Bernardino where the husband, this was domestic violence,
right,
where the husband turned around and he and his wife had, she was a teacher, and the wife had, they had only been married for a couple of months.
Right.
And people didn't realize they were already separated after a couple of months. So he went up to the school and said, "Hey, where's my wife?" And they said, "Oh, she's in the back in the classroom." So he goes back there, and then he shoots her, and then there was a 9-year-old kid that got killed also, a 9-year-old child that got killed as well.
Wow.
And obviously, and he killed himself. But so there's been a number of issues out that way.
Right.
You know, and, you know, not to say that that's a high area for any of this, but there was another, that's another example of domestic violence that was out that way. Now, is what that did when we heard about that was open up the door to say, okay, we really don't get into the issue about men being the victims of these things, because most men don't want to walk in the court talk about my wife beat me up.
Right.
You know, so it doesn't work that way. So men, they say, are overlooked as victims of domestic violence. So it's what we wanted to do. Now, we've talked about domestic violence on the show before, but this is a new year. I think that the issue is an issue that bears repeating for us to kind of keep it in mind, first of all, that domestic violence at any level is bad.
Right.
You know, but what we have to look at is that it is one of the most pressing issues in American society regarding domestic violence. Everyone quotes the statistics given by the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence. 1 in 4 women will be the victims of domestic violence at some point in their lives. And 1.3 million women are assaulted by their partner every year. 85% of domestic violence reported is against women. We get it. We understand it. However, in a conflicting survey that they've taken out, they're also saying that it's been found that 40% of the victims of severe physical domestic violence are men. I said severe, okay? Severe situations of men.
Right.
Now, you know, I knew a guy one time that was the, this was years ago, that was the victim of domestic violence. And he confided in me. He didn't really want to tell anybody anything, but he just wanted to talk about it. Now, I'm going to tell you, despite many findings that show almost equal amounts of abuse perpetrated against men and women, the media and the government focus the most attention on female victims,
right,
versus men. I mean, would you agree with that?
No, I definitely agree with it, and that's why I wanted to know, you know, to do this topic, because it's very serious. I mean, we're new guys. We don't want anybody to snap. You know what I mean? So, and this can't be ignored any longer, because I've seen situations where a woman might slap a man in public. If he retaliates, the whole crowd around him is going to beat him up. You know what I mean? It's like there's not a lot of sympathy for men being abused in these situations. And let's just talk about abuse, because it's not just a physical abuse. It's also emotional abuse and things like that. Mm-hmm. Being name called and, you know what I mean, and put down and belittled. There's financial abuse. There's a whole list of issues about men being abused.
Well, the other side of the coin is, Jamal, is that men who do complain about it get ridiculed.
True.
They get made fun of, according to some of these reports that we have. Now, they say that there's been an increase in the total number of fatalities with domestic violence incidents against women, but men are more likely to be the victims of attacks with a deadly weapon. Okay, we're getting a call right now, so this is going to be interesting. Hi, you're live in the air with Jim Potts and Jamal Potts on LA Talk Radio. Do you have a question or a comment to share? Hello. Okay, I'm not sure what happened there. So at any rate, getting back to what we're saying, so we lost that. Somehow or another, we lost the caller. Not sure. But anyway, maybe the person can call back. That's a very touchy subject. So, you know, again, anybody has an issue, not an issue, I should say. Anybody has a comment that they want to share.
Let me share this story.
Go ahead.
This is not necessarily domestic violence, but this was a high school event that happened where a girl was frustrated with a boy. She slapped him, okay? To get her back, he shoved her to push her back. Of course, she called the police. Her parents called the police. The police came up there, and I mean, they went off on him, and they automatically saw him, a football player, and just accused him of it. Well, after he went through the abuse that he went through, and I mean emotional abuse with the police because he's being blamed for something he didn't do, the police gathered stories and found out everybody said, no, the girl had actually slapped him, and he pushed her back to get him away. You know what I mean? And there's no reversing that psychology that young man went through. And you know what I mean? And we got to start.
Yeah, and that's true. And unfortunately, police aren't supposed to make a judgment call when they get there. I mean, you know, to me, you're supposed to investigate first.
True. I'm just speaking on really the lack of sympathy for men that get abused by women and stuff like that. And I think a lot of men are scared to call the police because they have a fear. One, it's embarrassing. They might feel it's embarrassing. And two, the tables might get turned on them.
You know, the issue here is abusive relationships always involve an imbalance of power and control.
Right.
Whether it's the woman that's being the abuser or the guy that is being the abuser. That's what it is. It's all about power. All right? It's what they say anyway. Now, look, people sometimes don't even recognize exactly what it is. So there's a few things here to look at. So for those of you that are out there that may be in that kind of situation, no matter whether you're a male or a female, you might be experiencing domestic violence and don't even realize it. So let me give you an idea about some things that they in this study that they've done. You might be experiencing domestic violence if your partner calls you names and insults you or puts you down, prevents you from going to work or school, stops you from seeing family members or friends, tries to control how you spend money, where you go or what you wear, acts jealous or possessive, or constantly accuses you of being unfaithful, gets angry when drinking alcohol or using drugs, threatens you with violence or a weapon, hits, kicks, shoves, slaps, chokes. Now that one I know you're going to know. There's no secret with that one, you know, for sure.
And checking your social media.
And checking, oh, you know what? That's a good one. That's not down here, but that's true too. Checking social media as well. Now, I don't know. I mean, I would think people have passwords, so they're not able to just get in there and just do that, but who knows?
But if he's abused, and I've seen this case happen where, you know, she's constantly, well, who's that following you? Who's that person following you? Who's that leaving you a message? You know, that happens.
Yeah, I couldn't personally live like that. There's a lot of people out there, though, that they just accept their situation for what it is. Now, they also talks about blames you or her for violent behavior, tells you that you deserve it. Now, listen to this. And again, these are my words now that I'm getting ready to quote you, so don't be sending me any hate mail. If you're gay, bisexual, and transgender, you might also be experiencing domestic violence if you're in a relationship with someone who threatens to tell friends and families and colleagues or community members about your sexual orientation or gender. See, that to me is like almost like extortion.
Right.
Okay, so those situations are out there. It tells you that the authorities won't help a gay, bisexual, or transgender person. Look, the times are changing on that now. I mean, honestly, there's a lot of people now that are proud of who they are. They're coming out, you know, in terms of who they are, and that they're prideful of the fact that they are from the gay community, but they're still family members, you know, who could take action against people, et cetera.
Right. There's been a couple celebrities that's been outed by somebody that they've been in a relationship with, and it was plastered all over social media, which I think is unfair and ridiculous, you know, for somebody to do that with somebody. If you had an intimate relationship, that's exactly what it was. That's between y'all two. Just because things didn't go your way, and that's another thing. A lot of men get abused by exes, you know.
Mm.
And that people in general, I mean, both, you know what I mean? I know the topic is more about men, but when I say abused by their exes, they might be following them, harassing them at work.
Well, that's stalking.
I'm going to tell your boss that's stalking. Yes, absolutely.
That's a whole different crime. You know, stalking is a felony.
Is it?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Stalking is a felony. You know, I mean, if you're being stalked, you know, you need to turn around and call the authorities anyway. To me, that's another form of, it would talk about domestic violence, and that would certainly be at the top of the list. But yeah, stalking can be a felony.
Damaging cars, throw a brick through the window, you get your tire slashed. All of these things, because you're not being hit, these are all abusive issues.
But, you know, you bring something up. Understand something. It also doesn't have to be somebody you're married to.
Absolutely.
I mean, because what you're talking about has to do. I remember when I was oh, I can't give the name of
Well,
this.
domestic violence is girlfriend is it's domestic is it could be a girlfriend or somebody you're
Yeah,
in
it's
some
a
type of
girlfriend, somebody you
relationship
have an intimate relationship with. It's all of that. It doesn't mean you
with.
have to be
Right.
married to them.
Right.
I remember one time I was on patrol and I got a call. I can't give the name of the celebrity, but he was a child star. And I go out there, roll to the call, and he had called in because, quote unquote, his girlfriend had thrown a brick through his windshield. So
Wow.
I thought about that when you just said that.
Right.
And he was a child star. This kid was only about, I don't know, 16 years old. And I'm like, well, where do you live? He says, well, that's my house right there. I said, well, your parents home? He says, no. He says, that's my house. I'm like, and this is your car. And it was a nice, it was a Mercedes. Like, well, wait a second. And then he told me who he was because I wasn't paying attention.
Right.
And he was an emancipated minor.
Oh,
An
wow.
emancipated minor is somebody that's financially able to take care of themselves at a very young age just because of the amount of money that he makes, et cetera.
Right.
So he had his own home, his own car, the whole nine yards, man. I mean, to be honest with you, that's the first emancipated minor that I ever met.
Right.
But the situation was he had broken up with this girl. She came and threw a brick through his window.
Right.
And he was obviously reporting it. And so.
So let me ask you this. What if a man is being physically abused by his woman, by his wife, girlfriend,
Or his man.
or his man, what can he do to defend himself safely? And the only reason why I'm not saying because it's just a little bit different, because if it's by his man, technically you can punch him back. But we taught by society to never put your hands on a woman no matter what. And I do agree with that. I do agree with that. So what can a man do to protect? I mean, buy a taser in case she, starts going upside his head to back her
I
up.
got an idea for you. I just saw this on the news. Have you heard of a Bolo wrap?
No, what's that?
Jamal, this just came out. We were watching it on the news. It was either yesterday or this morning. They have now come out with something called a Bolo wrap that the police are going to maybe
Oh,
start
I
using.
did see that. In case somebody runs and they
It's what
get.
they do. Right. They've got this device, this handheld device, that when they push the button, this object comes out. You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of back in the old days with the bolos.
Right, I know
And that's
exactly
what
what
they
you're talking
called it, a
about.
bolo wrap, okay?
Right.
And a bolo, for those of you who don't know what that is, just like a ball on either side of a string, okay? So that when you throw it, I think you've seen this in some of the foreign countries years ago, the way they used to catch animals and stuff like that.
Or
So
people.
it's called a bolo wrap.
Right.
So the police officers, this is being introduced, where they shoot this at you. And it literally shoot it at your legs and
Legs.
it wraps around your legs.
Right.
Now, I think that's pretty cool when you really think about it
I do
because they're
too.
able to subdue now
Right.
some suspect, either a suspect that's running, a suspect that's out of control.
Right.
They can use this Bolo wrap now that will subdue them.
Right.
So that's going to be very, very interesting. Yeah, it's called a Bolo wrap, you guys. So look that up. And you see, I think it's pretty cool.
I did
So
see that.
what I want to say was that you asked, what could you do? Maybe these guys need to
Get a
get
Bolo
Bolo
wrap.
wraps.
But see, this is part of the problem. This is part of the problem. We laugh when it's a guy, in these situations, we try to figure out what can he do. Like, is there a battered men's shelter
I'm sure if they have that. I'm
for
sure that's
battered
out there.
men?
Yeah, I'm
Like,
sure they
I've
have
never
that out there.
heard of that. I've always heard of,
Well, because you don't see it as often, so we get
Yeah.
that, So at any rate, look, it's an issue. Society has this as an issue, and we really do need to be able to deal with it without a doubt. So I would say to answer your question directly, listen, I would not advise any guy to ever hit a woman.
Absolutely
I'd rather
not.
just turn around and tell him walk away, man.
That is
I
the
hate to
best
say
thing.
it because I'm
That
going to
is the
tell you,
best
you roll
thing.
up in that situation, all of a sudden she starts pointing a finger. I hate to say it. It may seem a little bit one-sided, but come on. I think people understand where we're coming from with
Shoot,
that.
the first time she puts your hand, just get your stuff and leave. That's the really
Well,
the best.
sometimes it's not so simple, to be
That's
able
the
to do
best
that.
defense.
Right. Let's move on to this last category here about the United States counterterrorism. Look, I want to put it out there because people ask me and I get, inquiries regarding this business about counterterrorism because of what happened in Iran. And I spoke briefly about this a couple of weeks ago, but now The federal counterterrorism officials have announced that they're warning police departments now across the country to maintain a heightened state of awareness for the potential for ambush-style attacks against police officers. So this warning just came out, okay? And they say that because of the fact that police officers have a high visibility, that like 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, these officers are out there.
Right.
That they're saying that that these guys, and also on-duty first responders, that they're hearing some scuttlebutt, you know, that they better be careful because these people could take reprisals against them.
Wow.
Now, it's not just, and understand, it's not just, you know, from a tourism standpoint, but these kind of issues can also be, you know, domestic terrorism as well.
Okay.
But the intelligence report states that the appeal of ambush-style attacks for terrorists likely stems from the nature of the target, the attack concealment, and the element of surprise. The suddenness of an ambush attack may limit reaction and response by first responders, potentially providing the attacker with a tactical advantage, is what they're talking about. FBI data has reported that 53 law enforcement officers were victims of ambush-style attacks last year by both terrorists and non-terrorist individuals, all right? Between a certain time frame, it's actually not just last year, it's been over the last few years. So this is not a new issue, so that's why they're trying to put this information out there to be on the alert. The analysis also references a number of attacks that have happened at the airports. These guys shout, and you can always tell it's an international terrorist situation, because what do they shout out? Ali Akbar or something like that, which means God is great. So those are the ones you got to be careful about. That lets you know there's more on the international terrorism side. Now, the intelligence reports do not reference ongoing tensions between the United States and Iran, but this release comes through the American law enforcement intelligence officials that continue to assess the fallout stemming from the killing of Soleimani a couple of weeks in retaliation. So they're saying that they've been hearing some things, so we need to be cautious. Now, along those same lines, they're also talking about cyber attacks. So what they're saying is that now the Department of Homeland Security is warning also of a potential Iranian cyber attack on businesses, on key installations in the United States. You know, I was talking to my wife earlier, and I had for those of you that remember under the last administration, the chairman of the Chief Joint of Staff, we were at his house, General Martin Dempsey. We were at his home with a number of my classmates. And this was a number of years ago, because, again, it was during the other administration. And Marty had graduated from high school with us, and we were there. A group of us were there visiting at his home in Fort Myers, Virginia. And he said that one of the things that we needed to be looking at, so this is years ago, cyber attacks. He told me that years ago, that cyber attacks from China, Russia, and North Korea. All right. And at that time, I think he was more concerned about China, as I recall. I'm trying to remember back now. But the reality is this business about cyber attacks is not new. It's only going to develop more and more.
Right.
So we have to be prepared for it. Now, previous home-based plots have included, among other things, scouting and planning against infrastructure, targets, cyber. Now, they also have these people that are out there, these hackers. So remember that also, because hackers are out there going after businesses. And it's what they're doing is shutting down the business from a computer standpoint.
Right.
And now they are, and I've talked about this on occasion on the show, where they now have to pay a ransom.
Oh, wow.
Okay, in order for them to get their information unlocked, get the information back, et cetera. So, you know, Iran, okay, or Iran, however you want to call it, because of the fact of what happened with the killing of this general, they know that they're not going to be able to put boots on the ground over here. So they're going to be looking for another way to do it. And this is one of the ways that the Department of Homeland Security is talking about.
What could be some of the major impacts that Iran could...
Well, I'll tell you what they're talking about here. They're talking about shutting down sensitive installations, Jamal. Electricity? Think about it. If they get into one of these things and they, you know, like shut down the computer systems for electricity, right, as an example. That stuff's all computer-based now with technology.
Right.
So you could shut down a whole grid.
Right.
Okay, that could create havoc. So those are the kind of things they're talking about. Think about the banking industry.
Right.
What would happen if they get in with a cyber attack and they turn around and shut down the banking industry?
Wow.
There's a lot of different ways that they can actually do it. We're going to get a little bit more into detail next week on it. But those are the kind of things that we have to talk about. Now, previously on the show, we've also talked about the fact that individuals, even with their home computers, have got to be very careful also.
Right.
A couple of years ago, we had, I say a couple of years ago, it would have been in 2018 that we had a person on the show that talked about how to protect your computer from cyber attack, or I say cyber attacks from hackers and things of that nature, which to me is basically the same thing.
Right.
But anyway, hey, listen, it's time to close out the show. So you've been listening to Jim Potts and Jamal Potts on LA Talk Radio. It's time to close out the show, but be sure to join us next week. And do me a favor, if you like what you heard, spread the word. We would really appreciate it. Until then, be aware, be vigilant, and safe. But more importantly, be a reluctant victim. Until next week, guys.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.